This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Now with part one of the Morning Ag Show, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. Your grain futures from yesterday, Wednesday, off the Board of Trade had corn futures trading quietly, soybean futures finishing quietly, and wheat slightly lower on Wednesday. First off, your corn futures traded quietly during the morning with small gains registered. Prices tried to move into negative territory near the noon hour, but held on the closing of 2.5 cents higher in March at 4.27¾, and 1¼ cent higher in the new crop December, 4.13½. New market driving news is absent as attention in the near term is on South American weather and export activity. Wednesday's close was encouraging, considering soybean futures ended slightly lower after trading close to double-digit gains in the morning hours on Wednesday. The weekly ethanol report was considered heavy as supplies increased by 867,000 barrels, with stock now at 22.95 million. Total production was 6.699 million barrel. That's down from 6.937 last week. We'll be looking for continued sideways trading as the market neither has news to move higher and feed the bulls in the market, nor does it look like farmer selling is aggressive. Basis levels continue to show strength, which suggests strong demand, a lack of farmer selling, or both. Ethanol demand continues to run 10% lower than last year, which is in line with recent driving statistics, as consumers are traveling less and consuming about 10% fewer gallons of petroleum product. Soybean futures finished quietly and with disappointment as futures fell off the highs of the day. January closed at 11.83¾, down 1/2, posting a high of 11.95 yesterday, which was 11¼ cents higher on the session. March hit 11.99 before retreating and closing at 11.88. The previous contract high for January was $12. That was back on November 23rd, and March was $12.25, also from November 23rd. May and July futures posted new contract highs as they too finished slightly lower. Traders were buying soybean meal and selling soybean oil as meal gained $5 to $6 while bean oil lost 14 to 22 cents. Spillover support from Tuesday's positive crush report, coupled with short covering as well as traders trying to push the $12 resistance mark, had prices looking like they might move into new contract highs. Yet traders were either quick to sell the daily gains by establishing new shorts or exiting longs. Price began a slow descent lower as the session wore on yesterday. Even though Wednesday's close was not great for the bulls in the market, the recovery since middle last week, despite much-needed rain in parts of South America, suggests prices will breach overhead resistance. Finally, your March Chicago futures were down by 1¼ on wheat. They closed at 5.98½. May down 1½, 5.99¾. March Kansas City were down 4½, 5.61½. May down 4½, at 5.65¾. Although behind normal snowfall totals, most of the southwestern plains have received some amount of snowfall over the last 24 hours, providing much-needed snow cover for dormant winter wheat. Concerns are expected to also continue in southern Russia and the Ukraine, although it's likely to see much reaction to drought both here in the U.S. and Russia until spring. Once again, Wednesday's trade activity was minimal and continues to stay in line with wheat's ability of their albeit large trading range. As the Christmas holiday approaches, the wheat market is getting quieter, prepping for Christmas with an early close next Thursday and a three-day weekend ahead. On today, we'll see if exports hold any real strength, although probably and likely as many believe the next few months, Russia will be the stronghold in the cash market until their tax support their export tax is imposed February 15th. January options expire on Christmas Eve next week, the 24th, and markets close early on Christmas Eve at noon Central Time. So to recap your grain futures, corn was higher by 2½, soybeans lower by 0.5 to 0.75 cents, and wheat was lower by 1¼ to 1½ on Wednesday. Now we'll move on and take you to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Wednesday's Cash Grain Report.
This is Wednesday's report of the grain prices and trends prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. only country grain prices were mixed on Wednesday afternoon. In northern and western Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shelled corn bids were 2 to 5 cents higher at $3.95 to $4.27. Soybean bids were steady to a penny lower at $11.34 to $11.80. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shelled corn bids were 2 to 7 cents higher at $4.10 to $4.34. Soybean bids were steady at $11.61 to $11.84. In the southern part of the state, shelled corn bids were mixed at $4.10 to $4.52. Soybean bids were steady at $11.64 to $12.10. Illinois soybean processors' cash soybean bids were steady at $11.94 to $12.04. Basis was unchanged at 10 to 20 over the January. Hypro soybean meal on a truck basis was offered at $391.40 to $403.40 per ton, up $5.20 a ton, with basis unchanged at 2 under to 10 over the January. Illinois corn processors' cash corn bids were up 3 cents at $4.22 to $4.52, with basis unchanged at 5 under to 25 over the March. Illinois River barge loading elevators placed their producer corn bids 3 to 9 cents higher at $4.27 to $4.38, with basis unchanged to up 6 at option to 11 over the March. Soybeans ended mixed at $11.81 to $11.92, with basis unchanged to up 4 at 3 under to 8 over the January. East St. Louis barge loading elevators placed their producer corn bids 8 to 11 cents higher at $4.54 to $4.61. These elevators raised their soybean prices 1 to 3 cents, with quotations at $12.10 to $12.13. Soft wheat closed a penny lower at $6.28 to $6.30, and Milo ended the day mixed at $4.97 to $5.02. January contract bids in the northern part of the state: corn at $3.97 to $4.29, soybeans at $11.34 to $11.82. January contract bids in the central part of the state: corn at $4.07 to $4.33, soybeans at $11.61 to $11.86. January contract bids in the southern part of the state: corn at $4.14 to $4.54, soybeans at $11.71 to $12.16. That concludes our grain report. This is Katie Lemonager with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Moving on to your livestock futures here on a Thursday morning. Cattle futures saw modest buying strength across the board Wednesday, and hog futures failed to push higher on Wednesday. December cattle lagged the overall market up 17 cents at 108.77, but February cattle led the way higher, gaining 90 cents at 113.77. The buying strength was noted across the cattle complex. Live cattle contracts from June to December posted new contract highs Wednesday. The lack of buying in December futures was tied to the cash cattle market. Still very light developed, but some cattle did move as high as $105 to start off trade this week. This was squarely $3 to $5 under last week's cash trade. That low cash trade point is disappointing, and prices may firm up going into the end of the week, given the strength put on the board, but it will be difficult to get trade back to steady with last week. Wholesale box beef trade was mixed at midday. Choice carcasses dropped $1.95 lower, $2.0687. Selects were 28 cents higher, however, $1.9248. The box beef movement was moderate at 86 loads traded at midday, and they found retailers that have increased their purchases at these wholesale price levels. The box beef trade will need to find stability, and that will go a long way in supporting the market. The strength in the market has been based on seasonality and technical buying. The February contract pushed through last week's high and is poised for a strong move higher technically. Follow-through buying will be key today. Deferred contracts are seeing buying strength in anticipation of Friday's cattle on feed report. Expectations are for total cattle on feed to be mostly in line with next year, but placements are around 9% under last. Combine that number with a lower placement number in the October report, the prospects of a tighter overall cattle supply next summer and bringing that buying into that time frame. Feeder cattle followed live cattle with stronger gains. January feeders 75 cents higher, 140.85. February $1.07 higher, 141.97. Like the live cattle market, the technical picture looks friendly in the near term, but follow-through buying will be key to define the market. Again, your hog futures failed to push higher Wednesday and finished mostly lower for the day. February hogs 47 cents lower, 65.97. April hogs were 25 cents lower, 69.32. The most recent run in the hog market was lacking the fundamental support needed for extended gain, and the hog market saw some long liquidation. The early session saw strong selling as front-month contracts were trading triple digits lower to start off Wednesday. Hog prices did battle off session lows to reduce the losses of the day. The turn higher was led by a firmer retail value at the midday Wednesday. Retail pork carcasses were $1.48 higher, 75.62, with a strong push in the ham primal cut, which gained $9.74. The key will be the close going into the end of the day today. Recently, carcasses have struggled to hold midday gains. Thursday will bring the weekly export sales numbers, and the market will be closely watching the export sales going into next year. Pork values at these levels should trigger additional exports. The activity of China in the export market may be a key, especially with reports that the hog herd there is getting back to pre-ASF level. The cash market stayed soft overall, battling through large slaughter numbers. The lean hog index was firmer on Wednesday, closing a dime higher at 65.06, but holding a discount to the February contract, which could limit the upside. So again, to recap your livestock futures, cattle were higher and hogs lower on Wednesday. Now we'll move on and take you back to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for yesterday Wednesday's cash livestock report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Wednesday afternoon's livestock report. Starting with the National Direct Hog Report, calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass traded steady with a range of $46 to $56 with weighted average carcass price of $53.64. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter prices were steady with moderate demand for moderate offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows weighing under 400 pounds traded $24 to $27, 4 to 500 pounds $26 to $29, 5 to 600 pounds $30 to $33, and over 600 pounds traded at $32 to $35. On the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, prices for barrels and gilts at the country buying points were steady with moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging from $31 to $36. Packer receipts for barrels and gilts totaled 18,410. In the direct cattle trade from the National Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, steers on a dressed basis traded at $165 to $170. Heifers on a direct basis traded also at $165 to $170. From the National Daily Pork Plant Record Report, trading for retail and processing cuts was established with 424 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was $74.14, which was $2.89 lower. From the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading lower. Choice carcasses were $207.22, which was $1.60 lower. Select carcasses traded at $192.09, which was 11 cents lower. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated at 120,000 compared to 120,000 last week and 124,000 from a year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 483,000 compared to 496,000 last week and also 496,000 from a year ago. That it concludes the livestock report. This is Bobby Dowson with the U.S. and the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And it's coming up on 626 on this Thursday morning from FM 106, part one of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you by the McAdams Millwright Service, by Linko Precision, and by DeKalb Asgrow. Part two of the Morning Ag Show brought to you this morning by Stein Seed, by Seavers Equipment of Hamel, Hillsboro, Greenfield, Carlinville, Auburn, and Jerseyville, and by the Montgomery County Farm Bureau, where membership means value. Once again, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thanks again, Randy. Now here for Ag News on a Thursday morning. Senate Finance Chairman and Ag Republican Chuck Grassley of Iowa is hopeful but hesitant to predict lawmakers will pass this week long-delayed new virus relief, including billions more for agriculture. Grassley isn't sure that the one-bill-without-objectional-provision approach by the House and Senate moderates will work, pointing out the importance to Republicans of business COVID lawsuit protection and, for Democrats, state and city aid.
Democrats are so mad because you don't have state and local in that one. You might not get 60 votes. And then for those of us that want lawsuit reform, we might have to swallow federal aid to states, but it might not get 60 votes because not enough Republicans would be for it.
60 votes is the threshold for passing controversial bills in the Senate, but the idea of dropping objectional provisions was raised earlier by Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky and rejected by House Speaker Pelosi and Democrats. Now, with federal funding again set to expire on Friday without a linked deal and Christmas the following Friday, there seems to be few options left.
So I think it might be the best you can do. And be too bad because the bipartisan bill has $13 billion in it for agriculture.
Failure would also leave 12 million Americans without unemployment benefits the day after Christmas, small businesses without renewed paycheck protection funding, and millions of renters subject to eviction. Billions for renters, schools, and health providers would also be lost. In news from the USDA, a report late last week from the USDA's National Institute of Food and Agriculture, along with Purdue University, shows a strong job demand for new college graduates with degrees in agricultural programs. U.S. college graduates can expect approximately 59,400 job opportunities annually between 2020 and 2025. This reflects a 2.6% growth from the previous 5 years. Employer demand will exceed the supply of available graduates with a bachelor's degree or higher in agricultural-related fields. A USDA NIFA spokesperson says students studying agriculture have made a sound career choice and will graduate into a strong and growing job market in the years ahead. Graduates earning degrees with emphasis in food, agriculture, renewable natural resources, and the environment will account for 61% of the annual supply pool. Most employment opportunities will be in the business and management sector at 42% and another 31% in the science and engineering sector. Openings anticipated in education, communications, and government will make up 14%, and 13% will be in the food and biomaterials production. In other ag news here on your Thursday, this time in health news not related to the coronavirus, the Wisconsin State Health Department is urging citizens to avoid a so-called holiday tradition in the state of Wisconsin. Through social media this week, the department says there's one holiday tradition that you need to pass on, and it's raw meat sandwiches. The sandwiches go by many names, called tiger meat, cannibal sandwiches, or South Dakota steak tartare. Here, I just call it Braunschweiger. Those are all considered a holiday tradition by many families, according to state officials in Wisconsin. The raw meat is typically served with crackers. The tradition appears in Midwestern states with significant German populations, such as the Dakotas, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, among others. However, the sandwiches, which include raw ground beef, raw eggs, and onions, along with a mix of spices, pose a threat for salmonella and other bacteria. The state health department says ground beef should always be cooked to an internal temperature of 160 degrees. The warning made national media rounds earlier on this week. However, eating raw ground beef or pork dishes is common in Germany and several other foreign countries. In other news, The man considered by many to be the nation's most recognizable farm broadcaster is preparing for a new chapter in his life, but not before looking at his own storied career. Rod Bain with the USDA conducts the first of two visits with legendary announcer Orion Samuelson in this edition of Agriculture USA.
The Wisconsin boy living on a dairy farm in the 1940s turned to the theater of the mind known as radio, more for entertainment than farm reports. But a health matter led to radio becoming much more for Orion Samuelson.
Coming out of eighth grade, out of the one-room country school, I contracted a bone disease that made me an invalid for 2 years. I wasn't able to walk my first 2 years of high school, so I listened to radio a great deal. It was my companion.
Meanwhile, regular visits over those 2 years by the vocational ag teacher to the Samuelson home eventually led to discussions of Orion's future beyond the farm.
No, I couldn't farm with a bone problem. And so the more we talked about it, he said, well, we'll get you into public speaking. And it was into FFA public speaking and 4-H public speaking that led me into the career now that I've enjoyed.
A radio and television career for the self-professed bashful kid that started in the late 1950s at stations in Wisconsin, before becoming in 1960 the farm director at WGN-TV and radio in Chicago. It has been in this capacity, and later in various national programs, that Orion has gained his reputation as perhaps the most recognized farm broadcaster in America. Amazement is how Orion describes the many achievements and notable assignments in service of agriculture.
Who would have thought that a dairy farm boy from Wisconsin would visit 72 countries with a camera crew, would take 9 trips with the Secretaries of Agriculture to foreign countries? I've visited 44 as a broadcaster. I've been to China 10 times. I've gone to Russia at least 4 times.
Not to mention membership in the National Radio Hall of Fame, the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Hall of Fame, 4-H Alumni Award, Lincoln Academy of Illinois Laureate, and so much more. There have been the highlights of a storied career outside of farm broadcasting. For instance, serving as host at WGN early in his tenure there of a radio program just recently acquired from a rival station, a program he fondly remembers listening to in his youth.
WLS in Chicago was the home of the National Barn Dance, and we would listen to them every Saturday night at our home in Wisconsin.
The Friday noon hour in November 1963, when Orion told station listeners of the death of a president.
A newsman comes running into the studio as I'm talking, lays down a yellow sheet of teletype paper from the United Press International. I glance at it, and it says President Kennedy has been shot.
Or Samuelson's tenure in the musical group Hut the Band, recording covers to make Jorgi Jorgensen proud.
Every once in a while, I will hear it on some radio station at Christmas time, Yosko Nuts at Christmas, which was a humorous recording, and you add to it a Norwegian accent that I had as a youngster growing up. It became a pretty good seller at Christmas time.
It's been a career for the ages. One that come December 31st of this year will culminate in that Orion will retire from WGN at that time. A 60-year employee with that station.
I guess the more I think about it and the more I hear about it, there aren't too many people who have been on the air on the same radio station for 60 years.
And although the word retire was used, Orion says himself, at 86 years old, he's not quite ready to do that, with other television and radio projects continuing.
I'll do it when I do it and not when the schedule on my radio log says, okay, this is your time, so do it.
That would be a good thing, as it has been Orion's ability to break down agriculture to a population more than ever disconnected with it that has secured his reputation as the nation's foremost ag communicator. More about that challenge in next week's visit with Orion on Agriculture USA. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Moving on now into local news for your Thursday. We're just 8 days away from Christmas, but local Grinch or two has been working overtime, stealing valuable items from farm vehicles and other types of commercial vehicles in and around the Litchfield area. We join Police Chief Kenny Riker to explain where and when these catalytic converters off vehicles have been stolen.
Actually, we've seen that occur in both areas. It's been more recent within our jurisdiction and within our city limits, but their surrounding counties and our own have seen an increase in the thefts of catalytic converters, especially off larger vehicles, here in the last few months.
Chief Reichert also explains that this rash of burglaries hasn't just been an isolated incident, but there's been many cases across the Litchfield area.
Within town here, we have several locations where larger vehicles are parked and stored for extended period of time. So those locations are where we're seeing this occur. Some are our business locations. Some are just where a larger vehicle has sat for a period of time where I think they may see that vehicle parked there. So if you could place those in a pretty easily viewed area, you certainly have security lights or a camera system to place them within the view of that ends up being really helpful. So, and in the rural area, same thing. I know a lot of people now have Ring cameras on their residence or on their buildings and those types of things, so make certain that those items are within view.
Junkyards are kind of known to be on the lookout for that type of stuff because burglaries of them do happen. But how are folks that do steal these catalytic converters, how are they turning them over to be able to get money?
Well, those items hold some intrinsic value as the metal is reusable, so they are finding ways to resell those either through the black market or, you know, open social media accounts and those types of things. So there is a market for them. They are kind of easy to unload, so they're something you should protect.
And again, that was Litchfield Police Chief Kenny Reicher. In other local ag news, as ag retailers are increasingly adopting digital solutions to improve their operational efficiency and enhance customers' overall service experience, Growmark FS is expanding its partnership with Silinftech. Silinftech is a Brazilian company with 13 years of experience developing digital ag solutions for the largest agricultural operations in the world on more than 22 million acres of row crops, sugarcane, coffee, and citrus. By marrying logistics, analytics, and real-time weather data with algorithms, Silinftech significantly increases partners' machinery and input use efficiency, improving crop yield and reducing environmental impact. To explain more about Growmark's expanding partnership, we join Nokomis native Lance Rupert, Growmark's Director of Agronomy Marketing Technology.
Yes, yeah, Silinftech's a Brazilian company that we were introduced to almost 3 years ago. It'll be 3 years ago this coming February. And what was a curiosity to me at that time was, you know, our FS member companies and retail organizations, you know, have a lot of equipment and a lot of people running those pieces of equipment. And Silinftech was a company that we thought could potentially help us become more efficient with those pieces of equipment so we could get over more acres in a day and, you know, service our customers at a higher level. So we worked with a handful of member companies to collect data initially so Silinftech could, you know, understand how they did their business, how they serviced their customers through operations, getting everything sprayed and fertilizer applied. And they're a pretty sophisticated tech company with artificial intelligence and, you know, ran the data and saw, you know, certain parameters that they thought we could, you know, improve upon to be more efficient. And then they built a, you know, a software solution to help us manage our fleets at a higher level. So, you know, just to get across more acres per day and to do a better job of executing on those acres as well.
Lance also explains that while GPS is an important part of this new technology, it's really artificial intelligence that's doing the job.
Yeah, of course, you know, the backbone's GPS as far as, you know, being in the right spot and applying and getting good coverage. Where the AI really comes into is, you know, today, an FS company might have, you know, orders to, you know, let's say apply a herbicide to a dozen fields, you know, in a day. Today it's a manual process done by people, of course, you know, kind of the way they lay out the day and how they travel and things like that. What they've done to help, you know, one area to be more efficient is they take all those fields into account And they let algorithms and artificial intelligence tell us first, you know, what would be the best path for the day to cover the least amount of miles and to cover the fields that are on the schedule most efficiently. After the artificial intelligence, the computer kind of spits out potentially the quote-unquote right answer. You know, they also allow people to say, well, we need to tweak this or tweak that. So it's a little bit of a combination between AI and, you know, algorithms helping us make better decisions, potentially without bias, or things that just the human eye can't see. But then they also allow humans to interact with it, you know, because there's always cases where things need to be tweaked due to other circumstances.
Lance also explains that this is a great way to reduce risk and also lower fuel costs when it comes to going across acres, township to township, to spread those fertilizers or herbicides on customers' fields.
Absolutely. And, you know, a big one for our companies is growers are planting faster and faster, and just being able to get across the acres that we need to timely get things done with the ability, again, for growers to plant a lot of acres in a short amount of time. And then with the weather situations we seem to have, you know, those windows for applications, especially in the spring, seem to get tighter and tighter. So the more acres we can get across efficiently every day that we have open to do that, you know, is a benefit to everybody.
And again, that's Lance Rupert, Director of Agronomy Marketing Technology with GrowMark FS. And that concludes your Ag News here on a Thursday morning. But remember, you can always send us your Ag News by email at WSMI at WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Thursday morning, December 17th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.